Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, the race is on for the Daytime Emmys. Last week, the list of actors who made the pre-nomination cut was released, and there are some really great names on there, both new and old. You know, I really feel the list is reflective of the year we've had. I mean, some years I look at who made the cut and I'm like genuinely perplexed. But I feel that this year it's so balanced, and maybe that's part of having four shows. But there's a parody that sometimes I feel doesn't exist. Personally, I was thrilled to see Days' Drake Hogeston on the list. Actually, the nominations were announced on his 32nd anniversary on Days, and it marks the first time he was on it. You know, he did such great work after Marlena's shooting, and we gave him Performer of the Week. And I really hope to see him on the final ballot. I was also so happy to see so many nominees from B&B this year. I think in like years past and last year especially, for some reason, they got real short shrift.
Mm-hmm. Well, as our General Hospital editor, I was, of course, delighted by their showing. I mean, how cool to see John Lindstrom back in the mix. And I think in the right category as lead actor. He'd been, you know, gone from the canvas for such a long time and then really was only used as supporting. But he's now carrying what I think is the strongest storyline on the show and doing such interesting work as serial killer Ryan, pretending to be his twin brother, Kevin. Also, Kirsten Storms, who plays Maxie. She was just heartbreaking in the storyline of, Maxie losing her husband, Nathan, in the line of duty. And I had spoken with Kirsten, who hasn't put her name in the running very often over the course of her daytime career, about this, you know, very subject over the summer. And she said she didn't always feel she had the material, which is not uncommon for some actors to choose not to submit themselves and play the game, if you will. But she felt that she did have the story in 2018 and was going to do it. So that was one name I was really looking out for when the list was released.
Oh, she was excellent in that story. And, you know, so is Michelle Stafford in mm-hmm. that, you know, same story. I feel we talked a lot about her eulogy at Nathan's funeral, which was just so moving. But really, you know, Michelle is amazing in whatever she does. So it's no surprise for me to see her there. But, you know, it's always nice when you feel someone deserves it and after the year they've had and then they make mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, I also have to shout out Max Gale, who plays Alzheimer's-stricken Mike on GH. He's received his first nomination. Of course, this was the first year he was eligible since he just started on the show last year. But I think Mike's storyline has also brought out some magnificent performances from Maurice Bernard, who plays his son Sonny, and also made the cut this year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's so funny because to me it's like Maurice is always good, but then there are years where he just really, you know, stands out and is so much better. You know, as you know, I just got back from Los Angeles, and on the ride out, I was sitting next to a woman who started talking to me as we were landing. She saw me working during the ride, and she asked what I did. And I told her, and then she let me know that she has not missed a day of General Hospital in over 20 years, and let me tell you, she loves her some Sonny. And it was like Sonny all day, every day. And I told her I was a big Sonny fan, too. So, again, I'm very happy, you know, to see Maurice. And I love the fact that he tweeted that he's not too cool to appreciate and be honored by the nomination, you know, because I think it's always an honor. And,
yeah.
And we forget that sometimes. You know, I think where we're also going to see some cool competition is in the guest performer category.
So in previous years, the rules surrounding the guest actor category precluded the nomination of anyone who had played the role in a previous year. And that's no longer the case, which is why you see someone like Hunter Tylo, who joined B&B in 1992 as Taylor, eligible and on the pre-nom list, because this year guest is defined just by the number of episodes in which you've appeared in a certain year.
You know, it's a good change because you really see so many actors coming back for short-term visits mm-hmm. and, you know, usually it's for something meaty. And, you know, especially for Days, I feel like they bring actors, you know, in and out for short stints. Kate Mancey, who is currently airing as Abigail, is on that list. And she's also won in the past. But then you also have Marcy Miller, who played Abigail before Kate, in lead actress. Then you have someone like Kelly Kruger, you know, who's Mac on Y&R. She was on years ago, but she came back in a very strong story with good material related to the JT drama. Speaking of which, Thad Luckinbill made the supporting actor cut.
You know, I always find supporting to be such an interesting category because people who fall under that rubric can run the gamut of a Thad Luckinbill who did a limited run but was in very, very heavy story throughout it, to someone like Eric Martzoff, who plays Brady on Days, who, you know, episode count-wise might be on more than a lot of people who are up for lead. And then you have someone like Aaron Spears from B&B, who I think of, you know, his Justin is really kind of that traditionally consummate supporting player on that show. historically, it's been a category that people submit themselves in, sort of acknowledging maybe they're not as veteran on their show as other people are, even if they are kind of in a leading story.
You know, I think there's often some confusion about what constitutes lead versus supporting. You know, to your point, is it how many episodes you've been in, how much story you carry, how long you've been on the show? I mean, I feel we've certainly seen people win in each category that probably didn't really belong there. You know, leads that could have easily gone into supporting and supporting wins that likely should have been in lead. Our guest today has actually won in every category available to her, and maybe she can clear it up for us. It's B&B's five-time Emmy winner, Heather Tom. Let's get her on the phone.
Hello.
Hey, Heather. You're on with Stephanie Sloan and Mara Levinsky.
Hello, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Good. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So you are in New York, I hear.
I am. I'm in New York. I'm shadowing the director on God Funded Me.
Oh, great.
So we've been shooting all over the city, which has been really, really fun and very, very cold.
I was just about to say, you chose quite the week.
No, it's been really cold. Yeah, it was
brutal.
Yeah, it's really been insanely cold. It's been the overarching theme of the entire shoot. Yeah.
Well, welcome.
Yeah.
So Mara and I were just talking about the Emmys. First of all, congratulations on your daytime Emmy prenom.
Oh, thank you.
You're so welcome. Now, you, of course, are no stranger to finding yourself in Emmy contention. You've won an impressive whopping five times. So what does that statistic even mean to you, and does it ever get old?
No, I mean, it never gets old. It's always, you know, it's fun to be invited to the party. And, you know, I have so much respect for my fellow daytime actors and the community as a whole that I'm always happy to be a part of it, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. Yeah, I mean, the Emmys are fun, and I'm glad we still get together and honor daytime once a year. And yeah, I hope it keeps going and going.
Is there like one of your five wins that's like closest to your heart, that like maybe you gaze more fondly at that statuette than the other ones?
I mean, they're all kind of like marked different times in my life, really, kind of. It's kind of funny to say that, but it's true. I think, you know, the one that I won when I was pregnant was kind of just the most fun because it was unexpected. And, you know, I can tell Zane that he was up there on stage with me. And like the burst of adrenaline that went through my body, just like he was doing like backflips. So I was like, "Woo, okay." But yeah, it was, that was certainly fun.
You know, we were discussing about how actors choose where to put themselves, you know, in lead versus supporting. You've won in both categories. So what's the behind the scenes thinking that goes into where you place yourself?
You know, it's an interesting thing because I would say that in most cases, the actors in supporting are really have lead storylines. I think sometimes it's an age thing. Sometimes it's an experience thing. Sometimes you just feel like, you know, that's the part that I had this year. I was the supporting character in the story. You know, so you kind of have to gauge it. I did definitely feel that the years that I was in supporting that, you know, I did have lead storylines, but I didn't feel like I was like ready to be in that category. And then once I'd won in the supporting, I was like, okay, I'm ready to be in this category. And that's kind of where I see myself staying. And if I don't have the material to stay in that category, then I'm not going to submit. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. But it's a personal thing, and you kind of have to have a feel for it and where you feel comfortable. I think Jacqueline went into the lead for the first time this year, and I'm really happy she did. She's had a lot of really, really wonderful work this last year, and she is, you know, definitely, you know, a lead on this show. And so I'm happy that she made that leap.
It was nice to see so many of your co-stars nominated, because I feel sometimes B&B doesn't get the representation it deserves, maybe just because you have a smaller cast, but you got some amazing performers on your show.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think that, honestly, we've spent so many years trying to finagle how we vote and how we, you know, view work and all of this stuff. And I think there have been a lot of really good changes for the better, but I think you just have to put your best work out there. And we're a small community that wants to support each other and support our shows. And I think that people recognize that when good work is out there, that, you know, they vote for it. And hopefully it's not just a matter of like, oh, I'm not going to vote for somebody because they're on a different show. But I really honestly don't. I don't see that so much anymore. Maybe when there are 9 shows on the air, there was more of a rivalry. But I think we all kind of know we're in this together. So right. I don't necessarily think that people are going like, I'm not going to vote for this person. She's simply not on my show.
I would hope not. Yeah.
That just wouldn't be right.
It just wouldn't be right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Heather, we always enjoy when we speak with someone with such a cool history in daytime to do a little walk down memory lane with them.
Oh, boy, sure.
Yeah.
So, I remember.
So you started off, of course, out on YNR in 1990, playing the pivotal role of Victoria Newman.
Yep.
What are your like early memories of starting out on daytime when you were just a teenager?
Well, I remember my first day at work, Edward Scott, who was our executive producer, who's a producer on Bold and the Beautiful now. I had my first scenes with Eric Braeden, and he came up to me and he said, I want you to be on time and know your lines and watch these people because they know what they're doing. And I've never forgotten that. It was like some of the best advice I've ever received just in, you know, not just on that show, but just in, you know, being professional anywhere and recognizing when you go on any job, you should need to be prepared and you need to be able to like, you know, play with the big boys and also watch and learn. And that kind of, that's really set the tone for my years on daytime and whatever show I was on. I would look at the heavy hitters and be like, okay, well, what are they doing? You know, what's Susan Flannery doing? What's Erica Slezak doing? You know, what's Melody Thomas Scott, Jeannie Cooper doing? Like, what are they doing? And even the other shows that I haven't been on, just, you know, really recognizing that these people have something really special and that's why they've lasted for so long and have so many people who love them. And so I think that was, you know, just a really, really amazing piece of advice to get right out of the gate and has, you know, like I said, set the tone for how I've conducted myself in the last 28 years, 29 years, are we 29 years yet?
We're fast approaching, so. Yeah.
We're closing in on 29.
Was it intimidating for you at first to be working with Eric and Melody?
I don't know that I was intimidated simply because, you know, I was 14. I'd been working a long time already. And I think that I didn't necessarily know what I was getting myself into. And I do think that I was very fortunate to work with them kind of right at the beginning, especially with Eric and Mel, just because they had very different styles. They showed up in a scene. They really made you listen and work and, you know, demanded a lot from you. And so that, you know, really set my work ethic and, you know, it made me feel like, okay, well, I can stand up with them and I can hold my own. And that's, you know, and I can also, again, still learn from what they're doing. And it was a little bit trial by fire, but I'm super grateful for it.
And you carried such heavy, dramatic material, you know, at such a young age. It's really wild to look back on.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Bell was such a genius, and he wrote such amazing story, and Brad has carried in his footsteps. And, you know, I remember getting scripts in my dressing room. They were just like little Christmas presents, and I couldn't wait to read through and find out what I was doing. And, you know, he really, he was really good to me in the storyline department, that is for sure. And was willing to kind of go there with the younger actor. I think of the stories that I did, and I'm not so sure that they would do that with an actor of 14, 15, 15 years old now. And, you know, and I'm glad they did. I had a lot of fun doing them.
Well, in between your YNR stints, you also played Kelly Kramer on One Life to Live for a bit in the mid-2000s.
Yes.
So first of all, what propelled you to New York and what was your experience like on that show?
I'd always wanted to go to New York and I was sad to leave YNR because that was really my home, but I felt like I kind of had to go and see what else is out there and really kind of, I think kids do this when they go to college, like they spread their wings and they kind of like, you know, find out who they are. And I didn't really have that experience. So this was kind of my like, college experience of like, I'm going to go someplace else where it's just me and I can, you know, push the boundaries a little bit. And I always wanted to go to conservatory. And of course I was working, so I didn't ever get to go to something like that. And so my goal when I came to New York was to study, because you can, you know, you can study with teachers that teach at Juilliard and Columbia and Yale. They all teach outside of those classrooms. And so I studied with, you know, Kristen Linklater for Voice and Jane Nichols for Clowning, and you know, and I kind of put together my own curriculum and did a bunch of theater. And One Life to Live was awesome. I had so much fun on that show. The cast was amazing. Just really, really salt of the earth people. And, you know, and Erica Slezak and Cassie DePiver were just awesome. And I had fun with that park. She was so different from Victoria. She was just this like fun, crazy, like a little ditzy, but super, you know, lots of heart. And I really loved Kelly. So I had a good time.
Do you ever run into Gina Tognoni and talk about how you both played the role?
She is right across the hall and I love her. I had super big shoes to fill when I went to One Life, and you know, I think she's just amazingly talented and doing such a, you know, bang up job over there at YNR. So yeah, definitely. We have a lunch date when I get back in town.
Oh, very nice.
So fast forwarding to 2007, you joined the cast of B&B and taking over the role of Katie. So was taking on this job like a no-brainer for you, or did you have any hesitation about like locking into another daytime gig?
I mean, I don't think I you know, Brad called and offered me the job, and of course I was like, oh yeah, I'll come back and work for the Bell family again. That sounds great. At the same time, I wanted to make sure that it was a good fit. And so I know that I did like a 6-month contract right out at first. And you know, just to see, is this something that I was going to want to do? And, you know, and then after, you know, like a month into it, I was like, all right, I'm good. You know, this is going to be fun. I'm just trying to find my way through Katie and you know, find her voice and, you know, where she kind of fit into the landscape and, you know, where I thought I would like to see her go. And, you know, so yeah, I felt right at home. I mean, it was really wonderful to kind of walk back through the doors of CBS and be like, oh, okay, I'm back home again.
Well, speaking of being at CBS, so you are at the same studio as YNR. So what is that like for you? And how often do you run into familiar faces from Genoa City?
Oh, like all the time. We're right across the hall from each other. So yeah, we see each other all the time. I actually gone over there and shadowed the directors over there to see how it's kind of different from what we do. Yeah, we're all close knit family. We know each other. Most of the people in the building, not just cast, but crew, know me since I was 14. So, you know, it's a very, very comfortable place to be.
I think you should like cross in the back of a scene one day that Amelia Heinle is doing as Victoria. Make it very confusing.
Yeah, I think Katie needs to go to Genoa City. I think she needs to go and take a trip. And like, you know, I really do. I think it would be really fun.
That would be a fun crossover for sure.
Yeah, it would. It would be a fun crossover. Or Victoria needs to come to Los Angeles.
Oh, that would be great.
You could do a house swap.
You know. Yeah, one or the other.
Well, certainly on The Bold and the Beautiful, you have had a lovely parade of leading men to work opposite. So let's talk about some of them. So let's talk first about Mr. Don Diamant.
Yes. Well, I think Don Diamant, or, you know, Bill is kind of Katie's one true love in a way. You know, they had a really beautiful, I thought, super romantic love story there at the beginning. And I love working with Donald. I've known him since I was 15. And, you know, so, and I think we have a very nice, easy chemistry that, you know, you can't really manufacture. It just comes from being really super comfortable with somebody and trusting them and knowing them for so long and really kind of knowing them, you know, inside and out in a lot of ways. And so I like that translates onto the screen. And we have a lot of fun working together. And I think that shows too.
Well, was that strange actually working together because you did know him when you were so young? Like, was it awkward at first?
Well, they actually started down that road right before I left because I kept on talking. Jack Smith was actually the head writer at the time at Young and the Restless. And I was like, put Victoria with Brad. You know, like Don Diamant and I work really well together. And they didn't until I left.
Rude. Took your idea and everything.
So when he came to Bold and Beautiful, I was like, put Katie with Bill. and so, I don't know that I had any influence over Brad, but Brad did that. And I think it worked out pretty well.
And now tell us about working with Torsten.
And Torsten's hysterical. I love Torsten. He's just like, he's the one who's always like, he's got something to complain about, but he's not really. It's always just like, it's funny. He's just a funny guy, super smart. Certainly, not hard on the eyes. I love working with him. My gosh, I'm on the set right now and it's so noisy. I don't know if you can hear all that, but like, I actually think we had a really nice chemistry too. And so maybe they'll revisit Katie and Ridge. You never know,
And maybe he'll give her a real ring this time.
Right.
Because
exactly.
The red string is certainly the legacy of that couple.
The red string. Yeah. I think Brad punished us for that. Like there was some kind of evil thing having to do with the red string. How long am I going to wear this damn string? And I was like, can't he just like swing by Zales and like pick up a ring? Like send his assistant out.
Right. No. Money's not a problem. Yeah. I mean, he could have stepped up at any point.
I know. This damn string, like bacteria string after a while. More for like 6 months. I totally think Brad was like screwing with me. I really do. I think that he was just like, yep, there you go.
String it up.
That's really funny. Yeah. Well, you look at the ring, the rock on Brooke's finger, and you think Katie really got the short shrift. That's really
I know.
Right.
I did get the short end of the deal, right?
So we absolutely loved Waity around these parts. So tell us about working with Darren Brooks.
I loved working with Darren. He's so much fun. And I just think that the way he plays his character is just like, it's so charming and funny, and that's a lot of that is him, and just being himself. And I thought they worked really well together, and I don't know what the big hoopla was about the stepson stuff, because I didn't even know Katie didn't even know him until he was an adult. And like Brooke, I mean, if you look at her history, my god, like how could this be scandalous?
Yeah, that was really a bit of a convenient excuse to break them up because they were like, so great together.
Like on daytime, but you never know. Again, they might revisit. I think I really liked that Wyatt did bring this fun side out of Katie, and I think that was kind of an important part for her to explore and realize that she had this, she kind of had a real rough time there with Bill. Like, it was not fun for her.
Yeah, and that was no walk in the park, for sure.
No, it was not. And I think he kind of made her see that, there are other ways to be loved. So I thought it was a really sweet story.
Mm-hmm. And finally, your most recent scene partner who has announced his departure, Ingo Rademacher.
I know. I'm sad to see him go. I was so happy that he was coming on. I was happy that they were bringing the Thorne character back, because I think it's kind of an important part of the show to have that family together. But I wish he had stuck it out a little longer because Katie and Thorne were kind of just getting going. I understand that people want to move on and try other things and see what else is out there. So I do wish him all the luck.
Now, Mara and I were huge fans of Zane Acor, actually. He was so adorable. And the fact that, obviously, he was your real-life son just added so much to the mix. So, first of all, how's he doing?
He's doing great. He's six. He's in kindergarten. He's doing fantastic. I know. he does ask me when he's going back to the studio, which I'm like, well, Will's in school, just like you are. So, I'm just like, totally like lied to his face.
He misses being a soap star.
Like, it's a really bad mommy moment, but I can't break it to him. But, so it was lovely to have him there. And I'm so happy that they allowed me to do that. And it made sense. But ultimately I knew that like, I didn't want him to be a biz kid. You know, I wanted him to go to school and do that part. And it's a lot of work for the parent, and I'm not up for it, to be honest. So, all in good time. He does cry on cue, though, I will say. He totally cries on cue. He gets a frowny face, and next thing you know, he has tears streaming down his face. And I'm like, what is that? And he starts like laughing. I was like, oh, honey, you got to go deeper. You got to go deeper. You need to be more specific. I'm not buying any of this. You got to change your choice.
What memory are you calling upon? Let's
exactly.
work through
Where's,
it.
Where is your, you know, where is your specificness? I don't buy any. It's all surface.
Yeah. When mom's an actor and a director. Ooh.
Yeah. It's a little terrifying. I'm like, oh man.
That's pretty hilarious. Well, how has it been to work with his successor, Mr. Finnegan George?
Yeah, I love him. He's come on. He's really like, he's really loosened up into the role. I think he has a really sweet chemistry with Don and with me, you know, and I'm so happy to have him. He's, you know, he's always prepared and always professional and has brought so much to the story. I mean, it's definitely, they did ask and it said, hey, do you want, you know, would you want Zane to do this? If you want him to be kind of more of a story point. And this is a terrible story and I will never, ever tell my child this. But I was like, yes, go ahead and age him. Be more of a story. So I pretty much got my child fired from his first job.
For his own good.
Again, really bad mommy moment. But, Finn is just, he's added a lot to the story. And I think, and it was important, especially with the custody thing. I think it was really important to have like a kid there who's like, this is what they do. They're an actor, you know? And I was lucky to find him.
Now, obviously the Logan sisters are such a popular group with the viewers and just the heart of B&B so much. Tell us about working with Catherine Kelly Lang and Jennifer Garrice.
I'm so happy that Jen is back. I hated it when we only had two of the three Logan girls on the campus. And I love my Logan sisters, and it doesn't really matter what they do. Like, Brooke can steal my husband over and over again, and it's just like, whatever. I think that, people buy us as sisters because we do have a very sisterly relationship in real life. And, I love working with them. I'm so happy that the gang is back together.
And it works so well. It just, some of the scenes, like, they wouldn't ring true or feel the same if they hadn't been with each other.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And, you know, who doesn't love a good Logan girl hug? Come on.
Yeah.
You gotta end the scenes with these Logan girl hugs.
Right. And then they throw Bridget and Hope in the mix. It just, you know.
Exactly. It's like a full huddle.
So over the past few years, Heather, you've, you know, expanded your creative roster to include directing. How did that come about and how did you end up, you know, directing at B&B and I guess getting access to the control room over there at YNR too?
Yeah. It's something I've always wanted to do. And so, about 3.5 years ago now, I guess, I asked Cindy Pop if she would allow me to shadow her. She's one of our director producers. And she was open to it. And so I went to Brad and I asked him if he would be okay with me doing that. And he was absolutely okay with it. No guarantees. Like, you know, there's no guarantee of a show or anything of that sort. So basically every moment I had that I was not working, I was with Cindy. And she walked me through the job of the director, the many, many, many jobs of the director, because on daytime you do wear a lot of hats. And, I was with her for like 6 months and she would start throwing me segments from her shows, which is just insanely generous. And, you know, I mean, it's a zero sum game, you know, definitely if somebody's working then somebody else isn't. And so it's just kind of insanely generous that she would go through that, knowing that, like, you know, I might get a show that she might have had. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's kind of unheard of. And so at a certain point, she said to Brad, the only way she's going to actually really learn is that she sits in the chair. And so I did that for a little bit, and then he gave me a show, and then he gave me another one, and now I've done almost 20. So, yeah,
that's amazing.
Directed yesterday.
Wow, what's it like to direct your co-stars?
Directing is like setting yourself on fire because it's just insanely fast, and you know, we're doing a crazy amount of material in a really short amount of time, and I love directing my co-stars because they are professionals and they know what they're doing. And a lot of them have played their parts for decades. And so there's not a whole lot of like coaching going on, certainly, but we had some scenes yesterday, with Katrina who plays Flo and Kiara who plays Zoe. And they were really long, really intense scenes. And so we talked through the beats and we kind of worked it, you know, beat by beat. And that was really fun. I had a really good time doing that. It's kind of nuts. It definitely does feel like I'm wearing a different hat when I'm there, you know, in that capacity. I'm not an actor at that point. I'm the one in the booth going like, can they please get them on their marks?
Do you ever find yourself in a scene, where you want to look at your co-star and say, did you ever think about doing it this way?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, we do talk through things when we're rehearsing. You know, I think that, like I said, a lot of us have played our parts for a long, long time, but you find stuff in rehearsal when you're rehearsing with another actor where you're like, ooh, that's something interesting. Like, let's bring some of that into it. Let's, you know, what is the marrow of the scene? Like, where are we going to find that thing that's going to, like, really set things off? And, you know, so you can find that. And then I think there have been instances where, you know, if somebody's playing it one way, you're like, well, if that's what you're giving me, then this is what I have to give you back. So let's talk about where we, you know, where we want to end up and, find our way through it that way.
Well, tell us about the CBS Directors Program that you are currently a part of.
Yeah, it's a CBS Directors and Initiative. And, there are two women and two men who are chosen every year, and it's a shadowing program, and it's a networking program. We meet with all of the executives at CBS, like everyone, and then they set us up with shadowing gigs on shows that we think might be good fits. So I'm shadowing on Got Friend with Me right now, and then I'm going to go to Charmed, and there are a few others that we're setting up. So
that's so cool.
It's been awesome. Yeah, it's really cool. It's really, really cool. So I'm really excited to be a part of it and thrilled to be a part of it, actually. And, just kind of learning as much as I can.
That's amazing. Do you see yourself maybe just directing someday, or do you think you'll always act?
I don't think you have to choose, you know, but it's definitely something that I feel really passionate about. It speaks to me. I had stuff yesterday on the show even that I'm like, okay, that's exactly what I wanted. And it feels really, really creative and gratifying to kind of see something in your head and then kind of see it come to fruition and work. So it's definitely something I'm going to keep pursuing.
Do you know Kimberly McCullough? I'm finding myself wondering since she...
I do know Kim. She's doing great.
Yeah, there's an interesting, overlap there between your interests. Well, we joked about you coming up on 29 years, but 30 is right around the corner. And what does that mean to you to realize, my goodness, you'll be celebrating your 30th year in daytime television?
I know. It's a little, it's crazy to think about, to be honest. It's just like, it's this normal thing that every now and then kind of hits you and goes like, wow, this is really not normal. and part of me goes that like most of my life is like on tape somewhere. And that's kind of crazy to think about. But I'm so grateful to have had a job like this for that period of time. It's kind of unheard of. It doesn't exist in this business really anymore. And, you know, I, I wouldn't have chosen any kind of different path. It's exactly where I've always wanted to be.
Well, that's the best thing to be able to say that,
exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Heather. We love talking to you.
Thank you.
And stay warm.
Yeah, if you possibly can. My goodness.
I will try.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll talk soon. Have a good day.
All right. You too.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Heather Tom for being our guest. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.